We have four seasons in the year: winter, spring, summer, and autumn. Although, as I found out when I came to England, you can have all four in one day. And the seasons are very varied in terms of light and temperature, darkness and cold. Some people suffer from what is called SAD, seasonal affective disorder. We have a good friend in Sweden who suffers terribly from that when winter comes. What's true of the seasons of in climate is also true of seasons of life. So you go from being a child to being an old person and all in between. Benjamin Disraeli, thinking about that, said this: youth is a blunder, manhood a struggle, old age a regret. Now, I don't know whether he was having a bad time as Prime Minister, not very optimistic. But I do believe that in the life we go through, we also go through seasons of life, where sometimes it's full of joy, everything is going well, and other times it's a struggle, things seem dark, and our emotions go up and down, so that sometimes we're joyful and at peace, and other times we're at pain. We experience real darkness. And the Psalms are God's gift to us, where we go through all the seasons of life. All the emotions that we can experience are there in the Psalms. And the wonderful thing is that whatever season we're going through, God is at the heart of it. The songs and prayers in the book of Psalms are expressed to God, whether they are full of joy or whether they're full of darkness. There's a wonderful verse in Psalm 34, verse 8, which encourages us to taste and see that the Lord is good. And I think that summarizes all of the Psalms. Taste and see that the Lord is good in all the seasons of life. So that some Psalms are full of exuberant praise to God. Psalm 100 is just exploding with joy. Shout for joy to the Lord. And then verse 5 says this: for the Lord is good, and his love endures forever. His faithfulness continues through all generations. So you can explode with joy because God is good, because he is loving, because he is faithful. And so there are lots of psalms like that, full of joy to God. Then there are some psalms, like Psalm 73, where the psalmist looks out at the world and he sees that the wicked are flourishing and those who follow God, they are suffering. And so he begins to feel resentment and envy until he goes to the temple. And when he comes to the temple, he realizes, no, God is in charge. The wicked, they have a terrible future ahead. Why should I be envious of them? And so he gets the right perspective as he comes to the temple. And then you have some psalms where the psalmist feels abandoned by God. They feel God is far away. And so Psalm 42 and 43, there's that sense of, where is God? And then there is that light, because he says, I will hope in God. And these are what we call the lament psalms. And then you have the psalm that we're looking at today, which is the darkest psalm. There is no light. There is no hope. I think in the Bible, there are two of the darkest places, and this psalm is one of them, the darkest place in all the Bible. And the other is the cross. The two darkest places in the Bible, Psalm 88 and the cross. So let's read Psalm 88. Lord, you are the God who saves me. Day and night I cry out to you. May my prayer come before you. Turn your ear to my cry. I am overwhelmed with troubles, and my life draws near to death. I am counted among those who go down to the pit. I am like one without strength. I am set apart with the dead, like the slain who lie in the grave, whom you remember no more, who are cut off from your care. You have put me in the lowest pit, in the darkest depths. Your wrath lies heavily on me. You have overwhelmed me with all your waves. You have taken from me my closest friends and have made me repulsive to them. I am confined and cannot escape. My eyes are dim with grief. I call to you, Lord, every day. I spread out my hands to you. Do you show your wonders to the dead? Do their spirits rise up and praise you? Is your love declared in the grave, your faithfulness in destruction? Are your wonders known in the place of darkness, or your righteous deeds in the land of oblivion? But I cry to you for help, Lord. In the morning my prayer comes before you. Why, Lord, do you reject me and hide your face from me? From my youth I have suffered and been close to death. I have borne your terrors and am in despair. Your wrath has swept over me. Your terrors have destroyed me. All day long they surround me like a flood. They have completely engulfed me. You have taken from me friend and neighbor. Darkness is my closest friend. Now that cheers you up. Why is this psalm in the Bible? It seems so depressing. Why is it there in the Bible? Well, I want to give a number of reasons. First of all, it shows us reality. This is what we go through sometimes. And there are some people particularly who experience this sort of darkness. And William Cooper was one of those. He had at least four periods of terrible depression. And he tried to commit suicide a few times. And I think if John Newton had not been his closest friend, he would have been in a terrible position. But John Newton stood with him. So this is reality. This is trouble without explanation. And sometimes we don't know why God allows us to go through certain things. We're struggling. But secondly, a psalm like this encourages us to come to God and express our hopelessness and our struggle. This is a psalm where the psalmist is crying out to God. He's coming to God. And so Tim Keller, in his book on his devotions through the Psalms, he says, we can worship God even with our despair. Even as we come expressing our despair to God, we are worshiping him because we believe in him. We believe he cares for us. We don't understand lots of things, but we come to him. And thirdly, I believe it displays victorious faith. Satan says people will only serve God if he blesses them. That's what he says. And Job and this psalm show that that's nonsense. God's people will engage with God when they have nothing. And we need to include in our success stories, stories like this. Usually when we think of success stories, we talk about God heard the prayer and everything was all right. And that's a success story. I believe Psalm 88 is a success story because here we have a man who doesn't have the answers. There's no hope in the psalm, but he is still clinging to God. Satan is defeated. So as we look at the psalm, I want to look at three things. First of all, the darkness experienced. Secondly, the response of faith. And thirdly, the foundation of hope. First, the darkness experienced. Here is someone who is near to death. He is in the darkest depths. I'm overwhelmed with troubles, and my life draws near to death. He can't see any hope. He's in the pit. He's been abandoned by his friends. You have taken from me my closest friends. You have taken from me friend and neighbor. It seems as if God is unconcerned for him. And so in verse 7, your wrath lies heavily on me. Verse 14, why, Lord, do you reject me and hide your face from me? And as he looks at his life, it seems as if his whole life is dominated by trouble. Just a sense of hopelessness. So as he looks back, he sees only trouble. Verse 15, from my youth I have suffered and been close to death. I have borne your terrors and am in despair. As he looks up, he sees only darkness. Verse 16 and 17, your wrath has swept over me, your terrors have destroyed me. All day long they surround me like a flood. They have completely engulfed me. As he looks around, he sees everyone's deserted him. He's all alone. You have taken from me friend and neighbor. As he looks forward, all he can see is trouble. Darkness is my closest friend. That's how the psalm ends. Darkness is my closest friend. That's a person in real darkness. Here is trouble without explanation, lasting as far back as the eye can see, seemingly stretching ahead without relief, and likely to be overtaken, still unresolved by death. And I guess some of you have experienced something of this in your life. As close friends have been taken, close family members have been taken, you've struggled with different issues, you've looked to the future and you don't see what's ahead, and you can say, feel something of this darkness. Well, this is deep, deep darkness. But secondly, the response of faith. The person who wrote this psalm, Haman, like Job, is a person of faith. In the book of Psalms, we have a number of psalms written by the sons of Korah, and Haman was one of their leaders. And next week, we're going to look at another psalm that he wrote, Psalm 84, which is full of hope and joy, very different from this psalm. But he's a person of faith. He comes to God, and the sons of Korah have written some of the greatest literature in world history. You'll notice that he cries out to God, verse 1, Lord, you are the God who saves me. When there's no other hope, he cries out to God. When he sees no salvation, he cries out to the God who saves. He is a man of faith. And that's what we do when we are in times of deep darkness. We come to God and we cry out to God. It's a cry of desperation. And day and night I cry out to you. He is desperate. Verse 9, my eyes are dim with grief. He's desperate. And he's determined. So that in the psalm you say, day and night I come to you. Every day I'm coming to you. Early in the morning I'm coming to you. So he's persistent in his praying. He's like the persistent widow in Luke 18 that Jesus talks about. doesn't give up, comes to God again and again and again. And we see steadfast, persevering faith. This is a man of faith. We see also that he comes honestly to God. Verse 3, I am overwhelmed with troubles. My eyes are dim with grief. We see that he confronts God. What's the point of me being here close to death? Does anybody praise you in death? And so he's confronting God and he's asking God questions. Why aren't you answering? A person of faith is in a covenant relationship with God. God has made a covenant with them. And one of the wonderful things about that is we can come to God exactly as we are. With all our questions, all our doubts, all our struggles, we can bring them to God. It's like a loving parent. They want to know what their child is going through, maybe at school, if they've been bullied, if they're struggling with something. And the loving parent will listen to the child. The child can say whatever they want, and the parent will listen. I think sometimes we, who are parents, we've been a bit busy. So maybe we're watching England against Scotland, and the child comes. No, just hang on, wait. Or we're reading the newspaper. No, I'll talk to you later. God is not like that. We can come to him with everything that is on our hearts. We can be honest. He knows it anyway, but he wants us to express it to him. And then thirdly, the foundation of hope. Is there any hope here when the last words are, darkness is my closest companion? What hope is there? Well, there is hope. Because first of all, there is hope because of our God, the God we worship. Again, verse 1, Lord, that's the covenant God, you are the God who saves me. We can come to God because he is good, he is loving, he is faithful. He became one of us. He came to this earth to live with us. He knows what we experience. And so we can come to him. And so whatever darkness we're going through, we can come to him. Secondly, because of the Bible. In the Bible, we read what God is like. And it's so important that we understand what God is like. You see, what we see in the light will strengthen us when we're in the dark. And so we need to learn more and more about what God is like. So when the times of trouble comes, we reach out to him, we cling to him. But also, the Bible shows us people engaging with God. And that engagement includes trouble and confusion and darkness. And so the books of Lamentations and Job and parts of Jeremiah and the Lament Psalms are to help us engage with God. And I think we do ourselves a great disservice when we ignore them. It's as if they don't exist. We prefer the Psalms of joy and good things. And we do ourselves disservice, but also we do others disservice. The last couple of years, when my father was alive, he was disabled. And he was struggling. He served God for over 50 years in Zambia. And then went back to Sweden, and he had these strokes, and he couldn't do anything for himself. And then his wife had senile dementia. And you can imagine the situation there. He was struggling. And so when I would visit them, I would try and find a psalm that was joyful. Because I could see he was struggling and frustrated. And so I wanted to encourage him and lift him up. And you know, later on, when I did some study in the Psalms, and particularly the Lament Psalms, I thought, no, it would have been better to have chosen a psalm of struggle, because that's where he was. That would have helped him, because he would have felt, no, I can bring my troubles to God. We're not on our own when we go through these struggles. When we look at Job and David and Haman and Jeremiah and Martin Luther and John Bunyan and Charles Spurgeon and William Cooper and Amy Carmichael and so on, they have gone through dark periods, and yet they have clung on to God. But also we have hope because of the cross. Jesus knows all about terrible darkness. So that when he's in the Garden of Gethsemane, he says, I'm overwhelmed with trouble, with sorrow. And then his friends leave him. Judas betrays him. The disciples all run away. Peter denies him. And then as he's hanging on the cross in the darkness, he says, my God, why have you forsaken me? There is no darker place than the cross. Jesus knows about darkness, and he's our companion. He experienced the ultimate, deeper darkness so that we will know we will not be abandoned by God. He was abandoned by God because he took our sin. He experienced hell when he was on the cross. He experienced that so we will never be abandoned by God. We can be secure. But then lastly, the resurrection. The resurrection of Jesus is the sign and guarantee that sin and death and darkness and Satan are defeated enemies. We go through trouble and darkness, but there is glory ahead. We will experience God's salvation in its fullness. And Psalm 88, verse 1, Lord, you are the God who saves me. And one day, we will experience the fullness of that salvation. So let's learn to use this psalm as we ourselves come in our trouble to God, but also as we pray for others who are going through trouble.